Donuts, not just for cops anymore, on Insights in Nursing. Welcome back to another episode of Insights in Nursing. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and we are back. I think we've been away for a week or so, but we are back, most of us back from Blog World, and there's some exciting things going on with healthcare and social media, so we'll be talking a little bit about healthcare and social media tonight, as well as also talking about some other topics in the news in healthcare and nursing. And we've got a great panel, as usual, together today, including a brand new panelist, hopefully not here for the only time. Rob Fraser is an RN in Canada, somewhat of a social media expert himself in many ways. And I thought Rob would be a good person to bring on the call today. Hopefully it won't be the last time he joins us on Insights. But Rob, welcome to Insights in Nursing.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks so much for having me on the show. And yeah, I'm a new grad up in Toronto, Canada. And not too much a social media expert, so much as someone who loves tools that can really share what our profession's doing. Thanks for having me on today.
No problem. And I know you have to kind of scoot out in the middle of the show, so why don't you tell us where people can find you now, and that way we can get that out of the way. So if you have to leave on the quiet, we will have it in there.
Oh, thanks. My kind of nursing website is called nursingideas.ca, and that's a site that I started to do interviews with nursing leaders and researchers. So that's probably the best kind of nursing place to find me. But you can also find me on Twitter at RDJ, Robert Douglas John, RDJ Fraser, F-R-A-S-E-R, and robertfraser.ca. That's .ca. And there's a funny kind of branding story behind why you really need to make sure to go to .ca. But please, yeah, check out robertfraser.ca.
So we should not check out robertfraser.com.
Precisely.
Okay. You know, of course, what we're going to have to do now.
I'm going to have to try that one.
Just don't do it at work.
Yes, it's okay. Well, Cora, I think you are at work, so be careful. Well, listen, Rob, it's great to have you on the show, and we'll let me get the rest of the panelists, then we'll jump on into the episode so you can get as much in as possible.
Sounds good.
And we also have joining us again our good pal Terry Pollack from the Undisclosed Government Hospital. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you, and it's great to talk to you. I'm sorry we missed you out in Blog World, but hopefully we'll make sure you can get there next year.
I would love to show up next year, and I promise I won't whine and cry and feel all pouty while you guys are talking about the fantastically great time you had. Okay, I'm all done.
Okay. And, of course, speaking of fantastically great time, the next two panelists were actually at Blog World. We had a great time together. Kim McAllister, how are you?
Doing good. And I absolutely did check out robertfraser.com, and I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
I'm blushing in my own home.
Robert, oh, my God. Robertfraser.ca.
C-A.
C-A. Yes. Okay. Well, thanks, Kim. And also we have Cora Vizcarra, who I got to meet for the first time face-to-face at Blog World. How you doing, Cora?
I'm doing good, Jamie. It was a pleasure to meet you and Kim and many others that unfortunately couldn't be here today. But it was so great to see all of you.
Yeah, it was. And so we're going to just jump on in here. I want to talk a little bit about social media and nursing and healthcare, because talking to some of the people at Blog World, I know, Kim, you were instrumental in helping to put that track together. And there is, I'm sorry, I'm reading the chat room chatter. I need to stop doing that. but there, Kim, you were instrumental in putting together some of the pieces of the track for the healthcare social media track that was graciously sponsored by Johnson & Johnson and their campaign for Nursing's Future, and just a lot of neat stuff there and massages and everything else. But there was a lot of good discussions and people from all aspects of healthcare there, weren't they?
Very much so. We had a very, very diverse group of people. We had corporate representatives. We had physicians, nurses, patients, PR reps. It was just a good mix of people involved with healthcare.
What was the thing that you found most interesting or enlightened you when you were listening to the different discussions, both on the stage and also in the in-between sessions in the hallways?
For me, the culmination of that track was the white paper. Or I'm sorry, was it white paper or whiteboard? I'm sorry, whiteboard session at the end, where you had, again, all these diverse aspects of healthcare, all these diverse areas of healthcare, people involved in many, many different areas, all focused and brainstorming on ways that communication could be better and patient care could be better. It was amazing. That was probably the most energizing part of the conference for me.
Cora, this was your first time out to Blog World, I guess, to this type of a non-nursing conference for social media. And it was great to meet you. And I know that you were kind of running around trying to catch everything that was going on in the time you were there. What impressed you most about what you saw there, and what has got you excited about moving forward and advancing your blog and your other social media aspects of your nursing profession?
Well, for one thing, I attended only the social health day, which was Thursday, and then I just went to the exhibits on Friday. And you know, I really now regret not staying for the rest of the weekend so I could, you know, get more information about general blogging itself. But I think for the social health part was, I think for the most part, I was very impressed with the patients that were there. And maybe, you know, it was just me, but I didn't realize how many patients are really so involved with social media and using it to be educated and empower themselves so that they can communicate with their physicians. So that was very impressive to me. And then, of course, you know, I agree with Kim towards the end. I was very impressed with when we all got back together, and the guy that was doing the whiteboard, he was very impressive and really captured all the essence of all the ideas that we were wanting to put together. So that was very impressive to me as well. And of course, meeting, you know, the bloggers that are very prominent, they're like legendary rock stars in the blogging world, both, you know, in regular blogging as well as in medical blogging. And, you know, so I've been following them for a while, and it was really nice to meet them. And of course, to meet your colleagues like you and Kim and all the others. Now, what was sad was that there were only a handful of us nurses that were there. And for whatever reason, you know, I hope that next time there'll be more and more so that we can get all together and be a powerful voice. But it was really nice. It was a very nice non-nursing conference. I was a little bit overwhelmed, and the exhibit hall was just nice and yet overwhelming to me. I was just like totally lost in there, but it was fun.
I'm looking forward already to next year. There were so many things that really grew and changed this year while I was there, but I have to agree with both of you. The wrap-up whiteboard session really helped me see a vision for positive change in healthcare. I mean, we've had so much talk about healthcare reform in the United States, and I think that's a problem worldwide as the populations in the industrialized nations continue to age. Healthcare costs will continue to rise, and adjusting and managing those healthcare costs is important. And really, what I liked best was about the way that social media, the blogging social media track, the podcasters that were there, the patient bloggers, Twitter, and everything else that was going on helped to bring us much more closely together to discuss something that we all were stakeholders in. And I really liked how it refocused everything back on, look, it's really about the patients. Rob, you're looking at tools that we can use in social media to assist nurses and all healthcare professionals. Do you see that this type of change is something that's starting to crop up in other locations, not just at a social media conference?
Yeah, I definitely would have to say it's starting to finally pop up everywhere else. And it's one of the things I really find interesting because I haven't been to the big American conferences, but there's lots of kind of little innovation meetups in Toronto, different types of groups that are really sharing this type of technology and the power of it. And I'm just finally kind of really starting to see it where it's happening in nursing. So I actually just got an email from the CEO of Victoria Order of Nurses. So they're the biggest community care agency in Canada. And the CEO, who's actually a former nurse, but she just started blogging. So it's interesting to see the tools starting to be used similar to the way that the kind of technology folks that are really kind of behind Blog World and all these sorts of tools, the tools start to kind of spread over. And now I'm wondering how that will start to kind of pop up, whether we'll start to see a lot more unconferences and meetups happening within nursing to share ideas rather than just the kind of traditional methods that we've been using in the past.
What's the one thing that you would tell a nurse who's maybe just saying, well, I don't understand Twitter, I don't know what I can do with Facebook, or don't know anything about reading or even thinking about starting my own blog? Is there a starting point that you tell people is a good place to just get their feet wet?
For me, I think my go-to starting point for nurses has been LinkedIn. And I know at least nursing students today are really kind of being forced and told to develop nursing portfolios. And these are binders that we're kind of carry around, basically just an enhanced kind of resume. And hopefully all nurses at least have a resume. But unfortunately, no managers or hospitals can go into your filing cabinet or go into your shelf and then pick up your kind of portfolio or resume. So putting it online is just a great way to start to actually allow people to kind of connect. So I think that's one of the ones that requires the kind of least amount of additional work. Everyone has their kind of resume, and it just takes taking that piece of paper and putting it online. So I think that's one of the best ways to kind of start and just see the connections grow.
I would add to that that I am hoping that nurses would expand their use of social media, meaning Facebook and Twitter, beyond, you know, personal use, and try to look at it and think out of the box, really, that you can use social media for learning as well. And it's just not connecting with, you know, lost friends, high school friends, or grandma and grandpa. I think it is really something, you know, that can be used creatively and more effectively also for nursing and advancing nursing and, education and clinical practice.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd really agree with that too. And I think it's, there's two groups of people, the part that are just really intimidated and don't know how to deal with the technology, but the ones who are excited about the potential, that's probably where the really good sound advice is consider how those tools can be used for education and sharing knowledge.
And I also, you know, think that not everybody has to blog. Not all nurses have to. It'll be nice to, so that it's just another way to exchange ideas and communicate. But certainly there are people that, you know, would just rather read and follow other people. But I still hope that somehow we can reach out and connect with them so we can hear their side of the story, or whatever their story is, and not just, you know, from someone who blogs a lot, so to speak.
Now, Terry, you've been around blogging for quite some time and really developed quite a following in that social media aspect of what you do. But do you also use these types of tools to advance your education and perhaps even educate patients?
Well, I have on occasion suggested to some of my patients certain websites where they can get more information about certain problems or medical issues that they're having. My patient population tends to be quite young. So when I talk about Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn or any of those things, they understand what I'm saying. The problem I run into is a lot of the people that I do work with who are highly educated nurses, few of them have under a master's degree and quite a few have PhDs. They don't know anything about Facebook. I talk about Twitter and they just look at me like deer caught in headlights. So I really would like to see more interaction among nurses in the blogosphere, but first we have to educate our peers about what's out there And these people aren't stupid by any stretch of the imagination. It's just, I don't know, they're older and, you know, we didn't grow up with computers or anything like that. So it's just something they're not, they don't feel it's a natural fit for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I read a really good article about that kind of last night too. And I think the type of crowd that we're in, not that we would kind of probably put the label stupid, but you wish that people were taking part in more of these kinds of tools. But it's the same as the first time looking at an infusion pump. It doesn't necessarily kind of make sense. And for some people, it's really struggle with that. So I'm actually working on a social media book right now with a publisher in the States. And one of the big parts is just get the baby kind of steps, explaining even how commenting on news articles and putting an informed opinion or giving a comment about how your clinical context or your kind of nursing experience relates to that, I think is something that nurses need to start doing more of.
That's a really important point, I think, is that we all think of the big social media giants, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and some of the other ones. But really, social media is broader than that. And you're right. Just having a nurse provide an informed response to an article, providing good information and feedback in a news setting can be a very valuable social media tool. And I think that's an important point to bring up, that people don't have to be on Twitter and Facebook and do all those other things, but just responding back and leaving a comment is so important. So I think that's just a great thing to add there, Rob. And we so often forget that, especially those of us that are in the midst of it, because, you know, we somehow in some ways we live in that social media environment and we've become very comfortable interacting in that way.
You know, and I think as more nurses get out in the blogosphere and start making comments about certain items in the news, the news media is going to be reaching out to us as well as physicians. I mean, there have been a couple of times where my friends and I have been contacted by news outlets like CNN. I was driving to the 7-Eleven one day and my phone rings and I pick it up and it's CNN. A reporter wanted to ask my opinion on something. I pull off the road and I go, "How'd you get my number?" "Oh, well, we traced it through your blog." Huh? I didn't know they read it. CNN reads our blogs. So
nice. Wow.
It's interesting. And like I said, the more that we get out there with our opinions, the more it's going to attract the news media to us.
Well, that part of the problem
will give us
nursing,
a better voice.
Right. And nursing has been notorious in not being willing to historically speak up or put their voice on record. Individual nurses. I have people calling me to discuss so many different things. And when I talk to them, they go, "We can't get anybody to talk to us." I spoke with a researcher working on a study on ambulance diversion, and he couldn't get any nurses at hospitals to talk with him. And I said, "Well, I'm not necessarily an expert, but I can give you my personal experience with, you know, the problem of diversion or the issue of diversion." And he goes, "That's all I really need." And yet we're so worried. I don't know if nurses are just worried or they're afraid they're not expert enough, or so they don't talk. So when the media or anybody finds a nurse who's willing to talk, that's the go-to nurse. And then they're like, "Okay, well, this person, let's see what they know. You know, I went to them for this and this and this. Now let's see what they think about this."
It's interesting because one of the things that struck me most importantly was how I think we all can pull our information together. And the meeting of the patient bloggers, you know, you don't think about that resource all the time, but I think that it's a resource that we all need to make more use of. And whatever our specialty is, we need to look out there for resources that might tie us to some of the patient experiences. If we have a specialized field, are there patients out there dealing with a specific disease? And one of the most intriguing comments I was able to pick up on was talking to Carrie Sparling, who is the author of the Six Until Me blog. And Carrie is a woman who lives with diabetes and blogs about everyday life as a diabetic. And one of the things she said was, you know, that the things that she comes up with to talk about on her post are not necessarily talking about her, you know, blood sugar numbers and, you know, the amount of insulin she's taking every day. It's about simple things like, you know, when she recently got married and she had to look for a wedding dress that she could put a pocket in for her insulin pump. And these real world applications have a huge impact on a person's quality of life living with a disease. And I think that that uniquely ties itself to good nursing care.
Absolutely. The patient blogs are probably, for me, the absolute best resource in, you know, we can learn the pathophysiology, we can learn the scientific aspects of illness, but to know and to really understand what it's like to live with a disease, the patient blogs, for me, are the go-to resource. You won't find that sort of dialogue anywhere else.
I will agree with Kim. That was one of my aha moments during Blog World, was just those patients that were there and blogging about their illnesses and seeking information and spreading information as well once they find it. So I was very, very impressed and really motivated me actually to think that, you know, if patients can do it, we should be able to do it as well from the nursing perspective. And Jamie, I wanted to also point out, you know, we're talking about individual nurses here, but are you seeing now, and I'm noticing a little bit, but not enough to, I guess, enough than I expected, the nursing organizations are now, you know, really getting more and more involved with social media. I don't think there's any one organization, at least the bigger ones, specialty and just general nursing, that doesn't have Twitter or Facebook or even do anything with social media. So I'm really encouraged a little bit, and hopefully through them, we could be able to get all the other nurses, their members, to join in as well.
I see a lot of that too, and I'm sure the rest of you do as well. I mean, not just nursing organizations, but any company or organization involved with the healthcare field, not just patient bloggers were at this conference last week, but also we had big pharma represented there. We had people from the industry, physicians, physician's assistants, just other interested people. And it was, it pointed out to me that there are a lot of different ways that companies can become involved. One of the things that came up was the regulation associated with the medical industry and how that it restricts them in some ways. I don't think in as many ways as they think, but in some ways for putting some information out there voluntarily, you know, necessarily because they're under FDA restriction. But what did come up was that these companies have huge resources and could provide some resources to back a patient forum or a nursing discussion group or whatever the case may be, so that the information can still be put out there with the, you know, the infrastructure assistance that is so necessary even in the easy use of social media today. So this ties into one of the first stories I picked up on the news link today, talking about nurse navigators. And this was an intriguing idea, the idea that for breast cancer patients, having a nurse who helps the patient navigate through the care process, that with this type of long-term treatment for patients, or any patient with a chronic problem, having a nurse navigator, someone who can be kind of I don't want to say mentor, but it could be that similar type of relationship. And it points out to me that this type of relationship would really be well served by using social media, either to help continue to connect the people, to bring other people into the discussion, and to spread that navigation out beyond just a single facility or clinic.
I found this article fairly interesting because it's one of the things that I thought, nursing especially kind of in the way that we're Sometimes it seems like the profession is striving to become an expert in something because we're such a diverse discipline. And I thought really my favorite part about nursing is that we get to know a lot about pretty much everything. And sure, when we're in a room with a surgeon or a endocrinologist, they have kind of really specialized expertise. But the nurses strength and I think really the key role that we play is that we can interface with so many different parts of the healthcare system and we have that broader understanding. So I really think it's a need to see a health organization really capitalizing on that kind of knowledge and really strongly utilizing it for patients.
Nurses are perfect for this.
And that's true. We, you know, we have that. I work in an outpatient infusion center, which, you know, and where patients actually receive their chemotherapy. But on the inpatient side, there we, you know, there are nurse navigators, not only for breast cancer, but also for other types of cancer. But it helps them, you know, the role of this one particular person, and they are usually nurses, is to get the patient through the system, not only through their cancer, but through the system, the hospital system that they're connected with or where they're going to get their treatment. Because that in itself can be overwhelming on top of what the patient's going to go through after they get their cancer treatment. So I've seen a few of them and I've met a few of them. In the beginning, I wasn't exactly sure what their work was supposed to be. But now seeing and reading more about it, I can truly appreciate it. And from a patient's perspective, it was really a godsend for some of our patients who, you know, who were really having a tough time through that. And if not for that nurse navigator, you know, it would have been more difficult for them.
Definitely. And we're going to say goodbye to Rob. Rob, take off. Be safe. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Yeah, happy to talk about social media anytime. Keep up the great work, everybody.
Bye, right. Rob.
Talk to you soon. So, obviously, it helps to have a navigator take you through a process, whatever that process might be. And certainly, nurses would be well-suited to do that in the healthcare setting. I know there have been a lot of studies looking at the information that is lost in the healthcare system whenever we turn over patient care to another person, whether it's nurse turning over at the end of the shift to the next set of nurses, whether it's the on-call resident passing along information to the next one in the line, whatever the case may be, there is information that is important information that may be lost along the way. And we see this a lot of times, especially in elderly patients who have multiple specialists and come in with that, you know, shoebox full of medications. And how, if they had a single person, even if it was a primary care health navigator, how that would make just a huge difference in how in their total health care.
That's perfect for nursing. And as you're describing it, I'm thinking that's what nurses should be doing. But how does a patient get assigned a nurse navigator? Are they assigned as a nurse on a one-to-one? Do you take a nurse into a practice and assign them a caseload so that they may be navigating patients' primary care through with maybe 20, 25 different patients? To me, that's almost what you're describing is what a nurse practitioner who is a primary care provider would be doing. The whole time you're describing that, navigating, helping, you know, consolidate, keeping people, you know, organized, their healthcare organized, it just, all I could think of was that sounds exactly like a primary care nurse practitioner. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a navigator. But I'm interested in how the navigators are hired. Does the hospital hire them? Does the patient hire them? Are they provided as a service by the hospital for specific disease progress, I mean, such as chemotherapy? Who hires a nurse navigator? How do you get in to do that?
The ones that are in our system are actually out of the practice, the doctor's practice, and this are a group of doctors that primarily specializes in breast cancer. And there's four or five of the doctors, and they do have, they have nurse coordinators for each doc. And some of these nurse coordinators actually do some of the nurse navigation, but I think now they've transferred it to one person in their practice that does that for all the breast cancer patients.
Okay, and then again, not necessarily every patient needs a navigator. Some might be more comfortable or, you know, doing it themselves or would be uncomfortable having somebody do it for them. Because so not every patient, I can imagine, would need a nurse navigator.
That's right. For this one, it's usually assigned to those that are newly diagnosed, those that are having difficulty adjusting, and then those that have relapsed.
That sounds good. But I guess Gail would kind of have to go through a practice, I would think. I can't imagine a hospital, although wouldn't that be nice to, if you're going to be an inpatient, to have a nurse actually assigned to, I guess that used to be called a primary care nurse, assigned to you for the entire time that you're in the hospital. And that all they specifically do is keep you, you know, help you navigate through. But now that I, again, it almost sounds like this is a nursing function anyway. And if it's in the hospital situation, it's almost like having a primary care nurse. I'm seeing a lot of overlap, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Couldn't this, I mean, first off, this is, I'll send up the little flag. For those of you out there looking for a nurse research project, I think this would make a great thing to study, the effects on overall costs when there is a nurse navigator. Because I suspect that when a patient is able to make better and more informed decisions about their disease process, whether it's with cancer treatment, whether it's with any kind of disease, even just general primary care decision making, that continual, just even if it's minor and occasional, healthcare oversight that you get from that type of just healthcare handholding when needed could be something that greatly possibly reduces healthcare costs. Now, I mean, obviously, I don't have anything but, you know, my own thought process to back that up. That's why I think it really might make a great nursing research study. But this is something that I think is very important, because if you can prove that this saves money, then you can get it billed.
I think ultimately that's a good idea, but for now I think it's just trying to understand how this process really works. And according to the link that you shared with us, there's actually two kinds of navigator, the oncology nurse and the patient navigator. And it's defined very clearly who they are and what they do. The ones that I have, that I was mentioning, are mostly nurses that do the work of a navigator. And again, very specialized to the breast cancer clinic.
Well, yeah, I go ahead.
No, go ahead, Terry.
Well, I was going to say, I've had a nurse navigator before. I had a mammogram that was a little dicey. And so before I had a biopsy, I was given this nurse navigator. She introduced herself, and fortunately, we didn't have to have a lot to do with each other because everything turned out fine. The biopsy was great. But the fact that she came in and introduced herself and said, if things don't go the way we hope they do, I'm here for you. And then I asked her what she did. And when she was speaking to me, Kim, you really hit it. It was like, oh, this is what primary nurses used to do when we were at the bedside and were only responsible for four patients.
And you had the same patient the entire time they were there.
Exactly.
And you were the one that was basically keeping track and keeping their true primary nursing, keeping their care organized, you know, and keeping everybody on the same page 24/7.
Right.
Terry, did it make a difference if the navigator had been through, I guess what I'm thinking with breast cancer, does it make a difference if the navigator has been through the experience before? So is that a requirement? So if you're navigating with a breast cancer patient, is it beneficial if you've actually been through the same things?
I don't know that it would really affect the empathy level. Most nurses are very empathetic anyway. I don't think that it would be a requirement, although it might give a nurse a little edge if she had, you know, gotten chemo or
gone through the same experience, but I don't think it should be a requirement for the job at all.
I think there's just some interesting ideas here that could be applied not just in oncology nursing, but I think any nurse specialty where you have a patient that's going to have some kind of ongoing treatment. And I agree, you know, when nurses had more time, Kim, to spend with their patients, they were able to do some of this. Now it just seems like in some places, nurses are just running from place to place to give the next set of meds. And somebody else is handling that minute-by-minute care that might be needed for somebody.
Or nobody's handling it.
Or nobody. Yeah.
Right.
More often, that is sadly the case.
Right. And what is seen as the less, the actual physical work of care is given a higher priority than the non-physical aspects of care, you know, the spiritual support, the emotional support, the being able to sit there and let a patient ventilate. I don't know that, which is wonderful to be able to do. I'm not sure if that's even, if you can really do that on the floors anymore. Certainly the time in the ER for that is limited.
I think that went by the wayside because you can't bill for it. I hate to sound like a cynic. But
you know, that's interesting because doctors can bill, I think, for time at the bedside. Whenever, at least when I hear doctors dictating, they're like, spent 45 minutes discussing case with patient or spent 30 minutes on consultation with. And I think they can add, they do. It's too bad nursing can't document, you know, spent as if you had spent 30 minutes, you know, discussing case with patient or patient discussing feelings over diagnosis and actually have that, you know, mean anything in terms of funding or getting paid for it. But I think doctors actually do get paid if they sit and talk.
You know, you're right, Kim. I think it's not important to the people that are reading the documentation because you can't bill for fluffing a pillow. You can't bill for helping someone walk to the bathroom and back. All you're going to bill for is, well, you know, place the NG tube. I hung this med and started this medication at this time. These are things that can be billed, and that's why they make it into documentation. If there was a way for us to bill for additional patient education time that might be needed, if there was, then we could document it, and it would justify additional time spent with that patient, and we might be able to provide better nursing care.
And sometimes the opportunity to listen or to teach or when the patient is receptive to that isn't in specified time frames. So it may be, you know, a quarter to 11 and you're getting ready to go off your shift and the patient blurts something out that makes you realize that, you know, now's the time they need to talk. Now's the time they need somebody to be able to listen. And so you really can't say, okay, well, from 9 to 9:30, we'll have all the patients ventilate about how they're feeling. And we'll do all our teaching between 9 and 9:30. You have to kind of be aware and empathetic to the fact that the patient needs to be in the frame of mind that they can be receptive or willing to ventilate. And that's not always done on schedule.
I want to move on to one more topic before we get out of here. And has to do with harm reduction strategies. We've been talking a long time about patient safety issues in the workplace and in the healthcare facilities, but there are also workplace associated issues. And one of the articles I picked up was from the University of Maryland School of Nursing, researchers looking at how nurses in hospitals and other facilities might be able to, first off, perform better services and more safely when they can use some skills and strategies that are adapted by other industries, that we can bring in something from perhaps trucking, for instance, or airlines. And, you know, is this one of the articles in the report, or one of the reports mentioned in this, is a report entitled, "Is It Time to Pull the Plug on 12-Hour Shifts?" saying that there may be a reason to recommend the reduction of the numbers of the number of hours per shift that nurses work because of possibilities that the longer hours end up meaning poor patient care and perhaps more opportunities for medical errors. This is something we've talked about in the past, and nurses working too much overtime or not enough or whatever the case may be. But it's interesting, you know, we don't let truck drivers drive more than so many hours in a row before they have to take a minimum break. But they don't apply that to the healthcare setting.
Or even pilots, for that matter, do have a certain amount of hours that they can fly before they get into that fatigue zone, and they're not allowed to fly after that. So I've worked a 12-hour shift, and I've worked now 8 hours. And it seems to me that, you know, there are people that are made to work 12 hours, and there are people that aren't. And I'm one of them. I, you know, 12 hours was just too exhausting for me. I was just dead tired, and I can't hardly even do anything afterwards. And so to me, it's just, you know, again, some nurses, you know, are made to work 12 hours and some are not. And I think you just have to be thoughtful in choosing what kind of shifts you should work on and be safe for patient care. Now, I don't think they – go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just wanted to say, no, I don't think they should limit and change the 12-hour shift, but just make it an option for those that, you know, could work it.
Well, I was laughing. I was going to say those who can work 12-hour shifts are also known as younger people, and those that can't work 12-hour shifts, pointing to myself, are the older people. Because some nurses, they thrive on those 12 hours. They've got the energy. They do it. They handle it, and they're fine. Not me. I can't do it. But I think to just negate 12-hour shifts, nurses are not truck drivers. We're not on the road being hypnotized by driving for 12 hours. We're not pilots. We're not in the, you know, our job is different. So in some areas, 12 hours is conducive to better patient care. You only have 2 turnovers a day. You know, at the end of the 2 12-hour shifts, the continuity is better. But the key is the individual nurse knowing whether or not he or she is capable of doing 12-hour shifts and staying, staying intact. I was probably thinking staying mentally intact, but being able to work 12 without becoming dangerous or having difficulty focusing.
There's some interesting things cited in this article here. They come up, they talk about circadian rhythm specialists looking at the fact that when the federal government stepped in and began regulating the trucking industry, that accident rates were reduced. So there's a study talking about that. Are we going to be able to move this into the healthcare field? There's some interesting recommendations here, and I'm sure if I read some of these, somebody's gonna out there gonna go, you know, where's that nurse from? She must be, you know, loopy on some narcotic to be writing this stuff down. But you know, eliminate all overtime for 12-hour nurses. Leaving on time must become a guarantee rather than unlikely occurrence. Nurse should not be called back after a 12-hour shift. This is an interesting one. Don't call a nurse back to work after a 12-hour shift because it disrupts their sleep rhythm and implies that time off is a luxury, as opposed to, and this is the interesting part, necessary for practice and performance, that our rest time and our time off is necessary for us to rejuvenate and be ready to go and appropriately alert for the next shift when we go back to work.
Yeah, this is a lot of, here in my area of California, a lot of this is written into the contracts that the hospitals have. You must have X amount of rest time between shifts. And if you don't, then they're paying you double time when you come back. So there's a lot of incentives. Actually, that could work in the opposite way, in that it would be an incentive for the nurse to come in after inadequate rest just to get the extra money. But a lot of what they're saying is don't do this, wait extra time. You're pretty much covered, at least in my area, by the contracts the hospitals are under with the nursing organizations or unions. I like this. Provide healthy, nutritious food on night shifts so that workers can eat. My hospital, my hospital just turned 60 years old, and there were at least 36 of various cupcakes in the break room last night. So on that, I could probably say, you know, yeah, they need to do a better job on that.
Well, and how many hospitals? I mean, the people that work day shift, they have access to a nice breakfast, a nice lunch, and a nice dinner. You come in and work night shift. If you're working 7 to 7 or 11 to 7 and you're there, there's nothing but vending machines available to you to provide you a meal.
And not even that. It's your coworkers that bring in, you know, 7-layer dips and guacamole. And, you know, sometimes we're our own worst enemies. Because we could easily bring in, you know, healthy food for that break room or a vegetable tray as opposed to, you know, the 2 pounds of seized chocolate that's sitting back there. So,
well, where's the fun in that, Kim?
I want to come work with you, Kim.
I remember the favorite doctor, and I worked at a small community hospital in the ER, and the favorite doctor for all the night shift nurses was an OB who made it a habit that if there was an emergency maternity that he had to come in for in the middle of the night, he always stopped and picked up a dozen donuts on his way in. And
for the emergency.
For the emergency room nurses. He'd always just stop off and walk in with the box, big smile on his face, you know, hello. Hello, ladies. Hello, folks. Here's the donuts. And he'd go in and see the patient. but, you know, it was like it almost would be like, you know, we'd see emergency maternity come in and we'd be like, are we going to have to call him? You know,
yeah, let's call him now instead of later.
I'm hungry now.
Right. Exactly.
So you're right. We were our own worst enemies.
That's just not for the emergency room. Our patients in our outpatient infusion center does that too. They come every 6 or 8 weeks and you know, this one guy owns a bakery actually where he sells donuts. So we would have the best donuts that he made himself and he would bring it every time he comes. And he'd bring not only one box, but like 6 boxes. So that's like 6 dozen donuts.
Oh,
for all of us. And he comes at 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's just, it's hard to resist those, you know, but
yeah, trying to diet on the night shift just does not work.
Yeah.
That article mentioned no overtime. Heresy. Just absolute heresy.
Well, that's the thing. I have a question even for Kim. You said a lot of these things are built into your contracts. Mm-hmm. My question would be, they may be built into the contracts, but are they honored?
Oh, absolutely. They cannot.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, here's how it works. They cannot, because it's in the contract, they cannot schedule you any closer or without that absolute adequate rest time between shifts. They cannot do it. However, they can say, are you willing to come in, you know, now? And you can say, okay, sure, I will. They can offer it to you, and then they have to pay you double time for the time that you're there up until your shift would have normally started. So while they cannot, they can't make you work more or with minimal rest or insufficient rest, as they call it, but they can offer you the opportunity to come in early with insufficient rest and make a ton of money while you do it. The thing is, they don't like to do that because that's overtime and it really wrecks havoc on the budget. So it kind of works itself out. If they really need you, you can do it and you'll make good money. So that's when I say it's kind of, at least for us, it's kind of up to the individual nurse to know their limits and to know that what they can and can't tolerate in terms of number of hours and rest period.
I think that's probably a good spot for us to wrap up. I know that there's just a lot that we could continue to discuss about this, and maybe we need to revisit this particular article, and maybe we can bring Sue Benden back in from here in the Baltimore area, have her chime in on some of the ideas and things that they do to reduce workplace fatigue for the nurses in her system. But it's something that we just, I know this will crop up again. It's an interesting article. And I just want to urge everybody, when you go to insightsinnursing.com and you find the link in the show notes for this episode, you know, we'll have links to all these articles. And we touch on some specific points in those articles, but there's always a lot more information there. And you should follow up and see what's going on. This is going to be a very interesting study. And I'll be intrigued to see how this is picked up and run with in a future research project. So, Terry, we will go ahead and get wrapped up here. Where can we find more of you out there on the interwebs?
At nurseratchetsplace.com, and I'm on Twitter as MotherJonesRN.
Excellent, and it's great to talk to you again. And we're just going to come kidnap you for Blog World next year if you have to work again. We're just going
to
show up in a
van
with ski masks, Kim and I. And, you know, we'll pull up and just, you know, we won't pull you in because, you know, we'll just say, hey, come on, jump in.
Don't come to my place of employment, Travis.
No, they'll shoot us. I know. Undisclosed government facility.
They really do have guns there.
They will frown on the van with the ski-masked people grabbing a nurse off the street. Yeah. I'm thinking, okay, maybe not such a good idea.
That would not be a good idea.
Okay. This is why I just have to – this is why I stay in so often. Okay. What else?
Thank you
say?
For having me on your show, Jamie. I love you.
It's your show too. Listen, this isn't my show. This is our show. I have my show. This is our show.
Yeah, but you do all the work, so we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I just pick out a few articles, hit record, and let you folks go.
Yes, I'm like, oh yes, I have a podcast. Did you not know that?
Hey, you know what? It's okay. We all have. This is a great forum. I really enjoy doing it, and I'm hoping to continue to add some good people in periodically, like Rob and some other folks. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Kim, where can we find you?
I'm at emergyblog.com, and on Twitter, I'm also under emergyblog. And emergyblog actually has its own Facebook page. It should be facebook.com/emergyblog. Good luck if you get it, because I haven't been able to call it up yet, but eventually it'll be functioning.
Eventually. Mm-hmm. Eventually.
Yes.
All right. And Cora Viscara, last but not least, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me at infusionnurse.org. That's my blog. And on Twitter at infusionnurse. Also on Facebook as Cora Infusionnurse.
Excellent. And I also want to just thank Rob Fraser for coming on again. And again, you can find more from him at nursingideas.ca. And Rob's just got a lot of good things he's doing about helping social media tools for the healthcare industry and nurses in particular. And so looking forward, he's actually working on a book right now. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he comes up with, because it's just an important thing. And so we'll continue to talk about this topic. Of course, I'm Jamie Davis. I am also under the handle PodMedic on Twitter, PodMedic, because I'm also a paramedic, so that's where that comes from. Also, PodMedic on Facebook. And, of course, you can listen to my other show, the one that is my show, over at nursingshow.com that comes out every week. But this is Insights in Nursing. You can find out more about Insights in Nursing, including other articles and, of course, links to everything we talked about in this episode and all the other episodes over at insightsinnursing.com. And don't miss out on getting us every week. We try to do this every week. Sometimes we miss one here or there, but you can go ahead and get the show in iTunes, a Zoom Marketplace. You can use your favorite RSS reader. There's links right there on Insights in Nursing to go ahead and get the show. And of course, if you'd like to send us an email and you'd like me to forward that to any of the speakers, you can go ahead and send me an email to insightsinnursing@gmail.com. That's it for me. I do want to remind each and every one of you that we'll be back again soon. And in the meantime, you can check out other great shows like this one over at promednetwork.com.
And then I thought, don't call on me right now for at one point, because I have a 18-pound cat sitting on my shoulder, purring like a motorboat. And I thought, if you call on me now, when I click on, you're going to hear a
So we'll think you're snoring.
Yeah, well, that's what it would. Well, let me tell you, I'm not far from it.